Welcome back, everybody, into Bill's Chat. I am Josh McCarty. With me, as always, is Luca. Luca, how are you doing tonight?
Doing fantastic. Look at us. Back at it behind the mics. We're regularly rolling here. We talked about where we're getting to at the end of last episode. It's draft season, Josh. Anytime we're sitting to record at this time of the year, I'm always excited because as it's well documented at this point in time, we love this season. We love this part of the season. We love everything about it. And I know you had already talked to me, you know, behind the scenes about what we're going to be discussing today a little bit, not in full, but I love your comment and I shared it with you because there is something special about the position group and everything else we're going to round out today in today's episode. So excited.
I'm excited too. Today, we're going to take a deep dive into this defensive back class, the corners and the safeties, and what I think is going to be a pretty prominent need for these Buffalo Bills. But Luca, before we get this show off the ground, we have some news to update everybody on. We are back for our third annual NFL Draft live stream, which we love doing. We'll be live for the entire first round on Thursday night. For the draft. So come hang out with us. We'll react to every pick. We obviously watch the draft through a Bills lens. So if you want to go back a couple years when the receivers were falling, like Jordan Addison and Zay Flowers, and we were getting excited, and then they all came off the board, Jackson Smith and Jigba all came off the board in three picks in a row, we were crushed. Or we also had a little bit of a viral moment last year, Luca, when the Bills traded out of their spot with a team. What was it again? The Chiefs, the Chefs? I can't remember. We weren't happy about that, you specifically. And but we enjoy it. We love watching it through a Bills lens. We'd love if you come hang out with us. But Luca, we're not just going to be there for the draft. We have a special giveaway that you would like to tell the folks about.
Absolutely. Yeah, I hinted at it when I officially announced on our Twitter X account about doing the live show that there was another announcement. If you haven't seen already through that, first and foremost, make sure you're following us on Twitter for all these updates. But we sent out a tweet where we will be doing a giveaway this year. We got the all green light on everything we needed to make sure we shared this with everyone. And essentially what we will be doing during our draft live show is giving away a total of three items, two of which will be the this year 2025 Bills night draft night caps, I guess would be the way to say it. And then our grand prize, or just our other prize for one lucky winner, will actually be an autographed mini helmet of Keon Coleman. So very excited to do that. How you can enter for this giveaway is tweeted out on our X account. Just go check that out. You just got to do a couple simple little steps to enter for this giveaway. Like I said, we will then announce the winners live during our draft night live show spectacular on that first Thursday of the draft. And really excited to do this and things like that, kind of just give back. We did the Madden giveaway, I believe it was now 2 years ago. And it was fun and enjoyable doing that we like to, you know, at least show appreciation to anyone that tunes in, follows along, however you do it, whether it's you're just mad about Twitter, hopefully you're stopping by on YouTube. This one we included, you know, subscribe to our channel on YouTube, make sure you're following us on Twitter, comment on the tweet below just with a screenshot that you're subscribed on YouTube. I'll put it in a little formula. We'll probably do a fun little wheel spin live during the show when, you know, maybe the draft's stalling out a little bit and or it's picks where we're less concerned. I don't know. We'll figure out the logistics of it all on that night. But overall, excited for this giveaway. Once again, two 2025 Bills draft night hats and then one Keon Coleman autographed mini Bills helmet. So excited for that. Please be sure to check out our Twitter on that one. And again, on draft night, hopefully you are one of the names we will be reading off, which then we'll reach out, of course, afterwards to see how we need to get that to you. But appreciate you all, and we're going to have fun that night while we do that.
And this is not just open to new subscribers. If you've been with us on YouTube for a while, just send a quick screenshot of your button that says subscribe, and you are in there. So good luck to all of you entering into that. Luca, when I was a kid, and you probably can relate to this too, it would always make me nervous when my mom would come in the room and say, well, do you want the good news or the bad news? Luca, when it comes to the defensive back class and the Buffalo Bills, do you want the good news or the bad news?
I'm always a bad news first person.
Perfect, me too.
Okay, perfect. All right,
bad news. All right, the bad news, folks. Our Buffalo Bills, in my opinion, are in the worst shape since Sean McDermott has taken over this team at defensive back that they have ever been at this time of year. The one caveat would be, in 2017, we didn't know how good Jordan Poyer was going to be. He was just kind of a flyer free agent, and they hadn't drafted Tre'Davious White yet. So maybe you want to say it was worse in 2017. But right now, even with Christian Benford locked up long-term, opposite him is Jamarcus Ingram or Dane Jackson. You have Taron Johnson, who is, for lack of a better phrase, maybe on borrowed time at this point. I think we saw some regression last year. I don't know how much longer you can count on him playing at an all-pro level. If you still think he is, I would say he's not. And then at safety, you have Taylor Rapp, who I think is a baseline starter, but certainly replaceable. And then you have what? Cole Bishop going into year two, who I think the Bills obviously are high on. Or if he can't beat out DeMar Hamlin, you have DeMar Hamlin. Luca, would you agree with me that this is as rough as the Bills' secondary shape has been, given, you know, there's still quite a few months before the season starts? And I would say that was well on display in the AFC Championship game.
The latter, absolutely. But even the former, the original question you're asking, I also agree with. I mean, you laid it out perfectly. And ultimately, it's when you just look at the actual bones, that is the secondary. You have your all-pro corner, but then I don't think you can genuinely make a legitimate argument on why whoever you're slotting in the other three starting roles, you know, excluding Taron Johnson in this particular argument, those other three that you're comfortable with, absolutely blindly comfortable with in that position. You can bring up Taylor Rapp. You can bring up DeMar Hamlin. They started all last season for the most part, beyond some injury, whatever it might be. But it's what makes you overly comfortable with them at either of the safety positions. I'm not with you on that. And then corner two, you know, your second boundary corner position, I think that goes without saying. It's not a great spot. And in years past, it really felt like you were never quite at that negative, because even in 2017, you have Micah Hyde, was an unknown at the time, although was a nice free agent signing. You felt okay with the signing and bringing in, and it's an experienced player coming in as well. You mentioned Jordan Poyer. He was a bit of a flyer signing, but at least you could hang your hat on his experience. Let's just put him aside for now. And you had Tre'Davious White. It's like you have at least these other things that match up, where if you compared that year to this, it's similar, but I think it's this year is even lesser going into the draft right now, where there's true uncertainty everywhere beyond Christian Benford. And even in Christian Benford's case, you always have that one little thing where you're like, it does feel like he struggles to stay healthy most of the time. The great part about Christian Benford is you don't even have to worry about, let's say, the contract situation looming over him. Of course, we all talked, or you and I talked about it last week, but we all know about it at this point. He's extended for time being. He's good. He's locked up. He's locking up receivers as he's locked up in the Bills organization. That's great. But you still want to see him play a full season without anything really coming up. You know, minor knocks, things like that. No one ever stays 100% for an NFL season. That's known and everything's fine there. But can we avoid that thing that might cause you to miss substantial time, whether it's a week, 2 weeks, or just big moments in the playoffs? There's nothing you can do about it, but the reality is that's what happened. And it's like, can we not have that issue where now we can at least trust that your availability will be solid and sound there at your corner one position in Christian Benford's sake? There's a lot of variables that are unknown and make you feel uncertain with things right now in the secondary that, yeah, I'm with you on this point. I think since McDermott has started in Buffalo, this is definitely what I would call, going into the draft especially, the worst secondary situationally that he's ever had. That, you know, if there's a time to have a McDermott who is quote unquote known as a secondary guru, corner guru, this is a time where he's going to have to really show his worth and really make something happen, both with guys already in the house right now, but also the ones that they are potentially going to bring in through this draft that we're going to talk about tonight.
That is the bad news. And I think, you know, it's not anything that anybody wants to be super excited about. But I will tell you that the good news is, if you're ever needing a draft class to fill multiple holes, I think we might have that draft class right here, right now, particularly with what the Bills look for in defensive backs, and particularly with where the Bills pick and where some of these guys could be slotting in the draft. I will say one other thing. We did the defensive line show last week, and we talked about how I think common thought is the Bills' primary first need is a defensive lineman. I don't agree with that. I don't think Luca agrees with that. I think the Bills would view secondary as a primary need. And when you look at what they did in free agency, bringing in Joey Bosa, bringing in Larry Ogunjobi, bringing in Michael Hoyt. And then when you talk about what they did at defensive back, you're talking about veteran minimum deal for Dane Jackson. And then, you know, the safety they got from Washington, Derek Forrest, he's an interesting flyer, but also veteran minimum deal. They have done nothing to replace Rasul Douglas. They've done nothing to replenish the age concerns of Taron Johnson. They've done nothing to really make you feel better about the safety situation. So this is certainly, in my opinion, something that needs to be addressed early and maybe potentially often on draft night. All right, Luca. The last time the Bills took a cornerback in the first round of an NFL draft, they got Kyer Elam, who did not work out, and he was actually traded this offseason for a fifth-round pick to the Dallas Cowboys. But they also got, in the sixth round, a cornerback out of Villanova named Christian Benford, who is maybe the only member of the Bills secondary right now that we feel great about, depending on what you think about Taron Johnson. And he just got a nice extension. I think when you look back on that draft, there's some lessons to be learned. I mean, you know, you've played sports growing up. I think this saying that I'm about to say applies not just to sports, it applies to relationships, it applies to your job. You either win or you learn. A loss doesn't have to be a loss if you learn from the experience. Contrary to what Bills Twitter will tell you, the Bills aren't competing for Super Bowls every year because Brandon Bean is a horrendous drafter. He's pretty good at this. But yeah. He misses. All the teams miss, and Kyer Elam was a miss. He's very fortunate that the guy he took in the sixth round turned out to be everything he could have possibly wanted in Kyer Elam and more. What lessons do you think the Bills learned or should have learned from what went wrong with the draft pick of Kyer Elam? And if you want to also compound that with backing it up with taking Christian Benford, what lessons can the Bills take from that?
I really think the primary lesson of that experience was, we were sitting here doing draft prep, looking at the Bills roster and feeling the same way or similar way, not necessarily of where they were. We had at the time Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, you know, things like that. You were more comfortable with the secondary as a whole unit, but you understood that there was a concern at corner. There was a concern at secondary that you needed to draft for and fill those needs. It felt like corner was the absolute play in that draft. And now we're sitting here where we feel like it's a little bit more broad in the whole secondary as in its entirety, but it's similar in nature, and that being that. And what was learned from that experience was that told the Bills in that previous draft when they ended up with Kyer Elam, moving up a couple spots to get him, if I recall correctly, and then also having kind of an insurance thing that you felt like even at the time was just a depth practice squad. You know, we like some of his measurables, whatever it might be. You bring him in, see what we got. Turns out we actually found a huge diamond in the rough. What you learn is if you are putting that positional need very high on your board, which it was at the time, it doesn't hurt to take multiple swings at whatever that is. Because, as you pointed out, Bean missed on Kyer Elam. And it's not uncommon for GMs to miss. It's obviously a lot easier to miss later in the first round than it is earlier in the first round. So it's harder to evaluate those GMs, if they're still employed, that keep picking in the top five, top 10, compared to these guys like a Brandon Bean who are never picking before picks 24, 25. You know, it's not apples to apples there. The draft changes a lot. There's a lot less gold there at the late first round that you need to, you got to do your job well, and you're not going to hit on every one, but they understood at least that the positional need was very much there, was highest priority. And then they looked at their board, evaluated as the draft progressed, and eventually they found a guy that they were high on, I imagine, or they liked certain things about, and they made sure they took that over anything else that could have been there. Maybe it wasn't even the highest player on their board, but they made sure they double dipped. And because of that, they were able to get something that succeeded there. Because if you imagine that they looked at it in the opposite, where it's like, hey, we got this first round corner, that's going to be our guy, we're going to live with that, let's figure out everything else not corner related, and didn't end up taking Christian Benford, and we're then still sitting in this exact position without Christian Benford, we would be in deep shit. Like, that's, there's no other way to say it. You can't sugarcoat that. We'd be in deep shit right now. And I think that's something that I love, that Bean, McDermott, the front office, they understand the draft. You do not draft for immediate need, but positional need and value does have a significant impact on decision-making that you should have, not necessarily earlier on in the draft, but it should carry more weight later on in the draft. Because if you're looking at one position group being less, obviously in this case, the secondary, and you understand how thin you are, it sure doesn't hurt to take some swings later on when the difference between, let's say, corner number 36 on the board versus defensive tackle number 28 or offensive tackle number 30, whatever the debate is, it's like, hey, our offensive line feels like it's in a good spot. When you start getting to injuries where you might need to depend on a sixth round pick, you're probably in deep shit anyway, so let's not think that that matters. Defensive line, as you said, we put a little bit more of an investment on experience to bring there. It's like our positional need right now, value-wise, is defensive back. We're going to take a swing on this guy because we need to have more bodies in the house, and maybe we strike gold for the future off of this positional need. I think that's the exact lesson they learned from that draft, and I do. I love you saying, you know, it's like, hey, you either win or you learn. You're not losing in that sake if you at least learn and understand where a failure point occurred and don't make that same mistake. Now, it's we talk about, just a little caveat on top of that, like, it's not like I'm sitting here saying you can't fail again and pick another Kai or Elam. Like, you can't do that. It's like, it will potentially happen. It's you don't know until you know. That's how the draft works. Draft is all projection. You're all just going off of intangibles and things like that, that you hope once you bring them in and you can take that ball of clay and mold it into what you need. That's what they thought they had with Kyrie Elam. But what you learn from that and what you need to do again, essentially, is not put all the eggs in that basket. And like you did previously, understand that that position may find its way elsewhere. And therefore you had some other guys that you viewed at the time as developmental and just need to figure out, get them in house, see if we like them because of a couple things. And it turns out that they actually were the answer all the time, or, you know, the whole way through. And you're able to at least quote unquote luck out with that, even at that failure point. And you built in kind of this insurance policy because of that. And if you genuinely believe that corner and defensive back is really that weakest part of this roster, both now and in the future, that should be where you're taking your swings and trying to go for it, not necessarily just in the early rounds, but even in those later picks, if you're starting to match it up with everything else, because the value alone for that position is greater to you than maybe all the others.
And some of those swings that you mentioned, they can really turn out for you. The two best defensive backs the Bills feel good about right now, that we feel good about, Taron Johnson and Christian Benford, were day three picks. And we didn't, at the time they were taken, we were probably like, oh, who's that guy? And now we know who those guys are. And they've both been compensated very well and been a part of some very important Bills teams. I would say one lesson that the Bills should take from this is, I felt like, and maybe they're in the same situation this year, they really left themselves to the point where they almost had to take a cornerback in that draft. And Brandon Bean has done a good job in most drafts trying not to go into any draft with a definite need, where if I don't come away with this player, I can't really line up and play football. That's why I actually believe, Luca, if I had to bet money, I would bet that before draft day, Rasul Douglas will be a Bill again. I just feel like that's where it's going to trend. I don't think Brandon Bean wants to be in a position where he's threatened the entire night with Dane Jackson being his starting cornerback, because that can lead you to a sense of, I have to trade up. The Bills traded up for Kyer Elam when the other cornerbacks went off the board, and Brandon Bean said he was the last cornerback they had rated in that range. The other thing I will say, and it's hard to do because these are all amateur prospects, they all have warts. Kyer Elam's warts were, he never played zone coverage, and he was very grabby in man coverage. And so not only did you have this guy who was 21 years old coming out of the draft that had to learn an NFL scheme, he had never played zone before, or he'd played zone, but he never excelled at zone before. He had to learn that, and also had bad habits built in that you had to coach out of him. My dad was in the Marines, and he said that they always told him that they'd rather have somebody that's never shot a gun before versus somebody that's shot a gun but been shooting it the wrong way. Maybe that's not a great analogy, but you get the idea. It's like, I'd rather have somebody with a clean slate versus somebody that's got built-in bad habits. And that's where someone like Tariq Woolen was like this mold of clay that we both wanted the Bills to take in the first round, by the way. But he didn't have the bad habits that Kyer Elam had. And when you have bad habits, it's almost like you have further to go to get to the good side versus the no habits. So maybe those are some things that the Bills will look at. But one other thing from Bills history I want to get to before we start rolling on this show. In 2021, the Bills surprised everybody when they took Greg Rousseau in the first round. That wasn't the surprise. And then backed it up in the second round by taking Boogie Basham at the exact same position. I'm not telling you, Luca, that I think the Bills' first two picks are going to be defensive backs. That would be different because Rousseau and Basham were actually not just defensive linemen. They were both edges. I do believe there is a very good chance that the Bills' first three picks, they have 2 second rounds, 1 first round. I think where the value is in this draft with what the Bills need and where they could really infuse some talent on their defense and on their roster in general, I think there is a very good chance that 2 out of their first 3 picks are defensive backs. What say you?
I understand it. I understand that completely. And I think it's funny, we're also now pulling from that draft to kind of see trends and what they're capable of doing or what they are willing to do. And I can see a Bean-led front office evaluating this draft pool, and kind of it goes against what we talked about with the defensive line. Defensive line was very deep. It felt like you could find legitimate guys deep in the draft that you could also be very comfortable with coming in and making some sort of impact for you. You don't necessarily have to get the cream of the crop at the top. This one with DBs, I think there's a lot of great DBs, but there's tiers to them. And I think with the Bills in their situation, I think the key to all of that too, and me agreeing with that being something that could actually be possible for the Bills, they're sitting on 2 second rounders. And I think that's huge because to me, in my opinion, what that would give Bean the freedom decision-wise is, okay, as you mentioned, they did defensive end or edge when they had that draft. And it was surprising because that's really all they had asset-wise to do so. And that's not common to go back-to-back edge with your top two picks. They at least have that one to play with where they might have the tier, you know, tier one, let's say it ends with, I don't know, your Siobhan Revell Jr. That's your tier one. That's where you're comfortable with in the first round. Let's say that's their tier one. They end up getting one of those guys in that top echelon that they like at pick 30 or moved up to say 28 to get them or whatever the situation is. Now you're going into day two and you have your 2 second rounders and you can sit there. And if the board's falling in the way you like it, that first one, you could get whatever other position you want and eventually land and let the person that you're comfortable with fall into your lap a few picks later with that second round pick, whether you had to move up a couple spots to then get it. I want to say they're separated by less than 10 picks, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm. Because so, the Vikings won way more than we thought they would. Damn it, Vikings.
Vikings were in the wild card round. So it should be within, I think, 7 picks or whatever. So you can really play with that and understand, depending on how the board falls, maybe you do draft the secondary player, but understand you can draft with a, whatever other position group, whatever other player you're looking at in that second round later, and or do the reverse. You know, if it's still heavy with that, your tier two guys are all still just floating around on day two as it's approaching you in that first second round pick, you can let it sit and eventually fall on whoever you need in that second one. I think that gives them a lot more play, that it makes it very easy to pallet doing a two defensive back in the first two rounds kind of scenario like you're laying out here. And I do believe that the talent that is in this draft, the way the tiers break down, kind of work out in their favor that way. Like you could still be sitting there, depending on how the board breaks down, where a Trey Amos out of Ole Miss is just sitting there waiting for the Bills, you know, mid to late second round. And either they move up with that Viking second round pick a little bit to get into that back end of the mid second round, and or depending on how it's falling, it falls into their lap at that second round pick as well, whatever it is. I think and the separation is there as well from a Trey Amos to say a Darian Porter, where they're going to feel that need to do so because it kind of falls off a cliff, at least in my opinion, a little bit. You know, there's like a Maxwell Harrison. There's some other guys there, but it really, there is a tier that it kind of goes off of. Whereas the defensive line as a position group, in contrast, it doesn't feel like that tier is as much of a plateau, I guess is the way to define it, right? It's not a huge drop off at really any points. There are going to be some drop offs, but it progressively lessens and you still have valuable guys. Whereas in my opinion, these DBs do have distinct tiers that favor the Bills. I think there's a lot of guys that they like, and it might be enticing to them based on all the different variables in front of them to kind of go after one of them and then eventually a second one with the first three picks that they possess in those first two rounds, however it were to shake and bake kind of deal. We'll have to see, but I love the idea. I think it makes so much sense for this Bills team, and nothing would make me feel more confident at this point in time, honestly. Say your scenario where they signed Rasul Douglas, that might move the needle a little bit for me in comfort. But overall, if we came out of the draft with, say, two of these DBs, you know, we'll get into the names. I just don't want to start dropping names at this point in time because we want to talk about the individuals themselves. But if they come out with two of these names in the first three picks, aka two rounds, I would be ecstatic. Kind of that's going to be where my eyes would be all preseason, because at least the potential feels like it could get significantly better a lot quicker than it feels like pre-draft because of those individuals.
Luca, I could spend the next hour talking about the number one cornerback in this draft. I am obsessed with him. I have a crush on him. You have a crush on him. I have told you off the air. Maybe I told you this on the air. I can't remember. He is my favorite college football player I have watched since Charles Woodson, and people who know me know how much I love Charles Woodson. It is to the point where Travis Hunter, the cornerback / wide receiver out of Colorado, I don't care what team he goes to. He could become a New England Patriot. I will always root for that guy. Obviously not to do well against the Bills. That goes without saying. But it has been such a pleasure, Luca, to watch this kid. Jackson State, that's where he was beforehand. Go from Jackson State. Now, he was a star at Jackson State. It's not like he, you know, came out of nowhere at Colorado, but he followed Deion Sanders to Colorado, and it has just been such a pleasure to watch him dominate offensively, defensively. He is everything that is cool about sports. He is just, I mean, he's just an A-list player. He is so much fun to watch, and there is next to zero chance that he is going to be anywhere within sneezing distance of the Bills on draft night. So it doesn't give us any reason to talk about him other than the fact that we both enjoy gushing about him. I took my 60 seconds, you take yours, and then we'll move on to more realistic candidates.
I don't even have to take 60 seconds. Travis Hunter's the best player in the draft. Mm-hmm. I know some people want to put Genty in that conversation, deservingly so. But realistically, simply put, Travis Hunter special, and I just simply put it this way. Every time I hear anyone talk about, is he better at corner or wide receiver, that conversation drives me nuts, because he is as dynamic as you would like in both positions for a first-round graded talent. Mm-hmm. That why are you not on a rookie deal just figuring out a way? You don't have to have him out on the field 100% of snaps both sides, like figure out a way to make it work. And in this BS you hear about, oh, well, you can't be in both meeting rooms all week. Figure it out. Yeah. This isn't 1990s football where it's, this is my system, you need to conform to it. It's, no, we're in 2025. Technology's phenomenal. You can figure out a way to make this special gem of a talent figure it out. He is clearly smart enough to do it, even at a collegiate level, at a very high end level. That, okay, yes, I do believe that it's a significant step in the NFL, especially in meeting rooms. I can respect that. There's a lot more that goes into it, but you should be willing to rearrange your process and your ideas and how you handle those things to make something like that work. I don't buy into any of that BS. He is someone you absolutely, let's say for the first two seasons, at least the first season, but the first two seasons, see how it works. See what you can do with him on both sides. And then eventually, if it really feels like, let's say as a corner, he's suffering a little bit, but he's still excelling as a receiver, fine. Lean into it as a receiver, have him go there. That's where the money is too. Although, I mean, there's money on both sides, so it really doesn't matter that wise financially. But then and vice versa, do the same thing. If you're the New England Patriots, which really feels like is eventually going to be his destination, at least at this moment in time, you know, they could use a dynamic receiver like him. They could use a corner two just like him opposite of Gonzalez. That would be terrifying for someone like the Bills and stuff. Although, I mean, we got Josh Allen, so I don't care. But overall, it's just one of those things where don't limit a player of his caliber. Don't limit him just because, well, I don't know how it can work in the NFL. I don't know how I can figure it out. It is your job as a coach, you know, member, a front office, everyone in the building. It's your job to get the best out of a player, especially when you're drafting as high as you will be with Travis Hunter. You should figure it the F out, because he is not worth, before you see anything, he's not worth condensing down and just making an assumption that he's only a receiver or he's only a corner. You should be doing everything in your power to see everything he's capable of. And then from there, as time progresses, if for whatever reason it's not working out on one side, then shift him over to the other. And if it is working, you might have the greatest NFL player of the modern history. That's the ceiling. Because if you can find someone that can be, let's say, a top 12 wide receiver in the league, as well as a top 20 corner in the league, he doesn't have to be number one at either. If you have someone that fills both of those simultaneously under one contract, you have the best asset in NFL history for what feels like the modern era. And that is special in its own right.
And for what it's worth, his mentor is the guy who at one point played offense, defense, and baseball at the same time. So Deion Sanders being your mentor is not the worst thing for someone like Travis Hunter. I'm obsessed with him. Cannot wait to see what he does in the pros. I would like to see him not go to the Patriots, but we shall see what happens on draft day. All right, Luca, let's start talking about the rest of this class, because I love this class. I'm going to let you start off first, because I know there's a player that you are obsessed with. I do think it's going to be a challenging conversation for people who maybe still think very highly of Taron Johnson. We obviously are big Taron Johnson's fans, but Jahdae Barron out of Texas. I'm not even gonna set him up with a preview. What is it about him that fascinates you so much, particularly through a Bills lens?
Modern defensive football is someone that needs to be match zone capable, matchup heaven, utility. Everything that I'm mentioning here, willing to do whatever he needs to do to maximize whatever he's being asked of at the highest of levels. And if there is a guy who is known as a utility for one of the best defenses in college football that outshined a lot of the other individuals around him, it was Jahdae Barron out of Texas. Jahdae Barron was, I mean, go back to the college football playoff, go back to the Peach Bowl. Not that I want to relive it at all, but go back to the Peach Bowl. Jahdae Barron was the most frustrating guy across from my beloved Arizona State Sun Devils, because on one hand, I'm sitting here going, this guy is Taron Johnson, but better. And I love him so much. And I want him to be playing for my team at the next level. But if he could stop being that player right now, as he's absolutely shutting down everything for the Sun Devils, that would be very appreciated, because it was a problem. He could play. He was even lining up at outside corner and just locking shit down. And that was a problem. And then he'd come into the slot and lock that shit down and blow up the box as well, which if you know about Arizona State, they kind of lived in between the tackles because of that one guy who was eaten out of the backfield, Cam Scadaboo. So that was a problem. And then, oh, by the way, do you need him to play deep safe? Because he can do that for you too. And he does it at a very high level across the board. It's incredible. Now he lives inside the numbers primarily. That is where he will be in the NFL. He will be that nickel corner, deep safety, wherever it fits for whatever is needed. But I say it like that, and I don't put a role on him. You see him on some sites listed as a corner, some sites listed as a DB. I saw one place randomly list him as a safety. I don't think that's appropriate. I think he's more corner anyways. But it's valid because you can even watch other tape where he excelled. I mean, when he played Georgia both times, he popped. He plays the high-end guys, and there's always something, Josh, about those players that in the big games, when all of a sudden they're showing up the most, there's a reason for it. They're just built for those times, and it brings their best, and that's what you need in the NFL. And I just go back to one of my first things said. He is quite literally built for modern defensive football. He is built for it. He is match zone. He can do what you need. He can cover his guy, lock it down. You can ignore where he is at times because he is going to shut it off. And then he's smart enough to understand what's in front of him pre-snap, post-snap. And there's things out there. I love the one place that we like to pull up at least our general notes before we start falling in love with players. I love that they've even deciphered it where it's like he is so high level cerebral wise that he is willing to bait quarterbacks into exactly what he believes. And you watch the tape and you watch it happen. And then he is ferocious getting at the ball. He is electric. He's got that shutdown speed. He's got everything in his toolbox that with that, combined with his just smarts and IQ on a football level, if Jahdae Barron is sitting there at pick 25 and I am Brandon Bean, I am calling every GM sitting in front of me going, what would it take to move up to pick 25? What would it take to move up to pick 26? How do I get, do not let it fall any further. This is a piece that you can use now, even with still a functional Taron Johnson, but in all reality, in my opinion, because of something I saw even against ASU. I mean, the ASU game alone, the Peach Bowl alone, I was like, this guy's standing in the box at will, and he's doing the dirty work against a Cam Scadaboo, the guy who led the league or led the country other than Ashton Gentry, who led in everything, of course, from running back perspective. He was second in yards after contact, and the yards after contact was all at one point in the season greater than his total yards because contact was happening behind the line of scrimmage too damn much. And overall, this guy's shutting that down inside the box. It's like this guy, he checks all the boxes. This guy is incredible. This guy knows what he's doing. His IQ is high. His athleticism is great. I mean, he's listed at 5'11", and I've seen one individual say, oh, might be a little undersized. 5'11" is not what I would go undersized with at a DB size, especially when he's still clocking in at close to 200 pounds and he's running a sub 4.440. Like this guy is fine and he's willing to do everything. And he does it at an extremely high level. I cannot gush over a guy in this draft more than Jahdae Barron. He is, I mean, I'm giving my stamp already. He is my draft crush. I don't care. It's like Derek Stingley. In that draft, he was my certified draft crush of that class. It's like Jahdae Barron. I find it extremely hard to believe he's going to fail in the NFL. And it would only be better for him to be a Buffalo Bill because he feels like a match made in heaven at the right time to figure it out. You can get your safety help. You can get your nickel help. You can do whatever you need to do with this guy. Bring him in, figure it out because he is special. He is incredible, and I just cannot say it too much. I need Jahdae Barron to be a Buffalo Bill. He is, I mean, I'm leaking what probably is going to be my guy for the first round. Like, you make this happen if it's possible.
The year the Bills drafted Dalton Kincaid, that was 2023, there was a school of thought by people who covered the Bills. I know Joe Biscaglia was beating this drum that the Bills should draft Brian Branch. And the pushback against that was you still have Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer on this team. Brian Branch, even as a rookie, is not going to come in and beat those guys out. And Joe Biscaglia, who we both respect the hell out of as far as his Bills knowledge goes, great. He can play nickel for you if he needs to. There's going to be injuries. Cool. And if not, you just stash him for a year. And guess what? When one of those guys moves on, you have the replacement in-house. And that's why I'm bringing this up. I would love this pick. I would love everything about this pick. I question if the Bills will do this pick because I think that the Bills, when you're in a situation where you're in the AFC Championship game, you lose by one score, you feel like you're right there. Do you take in the first round a player who you may not see a path to immediate playing time for? My answer one would be yes, because as Luca always says, you're drafting for the future, not the immediate. And second, did you watch the AFC Championship game? Can you not find four guys in the secondary that Jahdae Barron will be better than trying to cover the Chiefs receivers at any position than the guys that were out there? So yes, take this kid. I love this kid. I love everything about his mentality towards football. I love the fact that you said he's an elite processor. And it's really important to also know Sean McDermott, and even going back to Leslie Frazier, they are from the school of the nickel defense. And the only way that works in the modern NFL is if you have a cornerback like a Taron Johnson, who is a nickel, who's not afraid to get in there and do the dirty work. Well, guess what? That's exactly what this kid is. He also excels at special teams. He also can come in and play dime linebacker if an injury happens to Matt Milano. There's a lot of ways for this kid to help you out year one. If you want to have him focused on nickel, I would understand this. You draft him. He's a guy you spent in the first round. And you're like, you know what? We don't want to confuse him by cross-training him. It'd be cool to get him on the field right now as a boundary corner or as a safety. But no, we see him as like a future all-pro slot corner. We're going to make him Taron Johnson's understudy. Our goal is by 2026, he's our starting slot corner. But right now, he's going to be an ace on special teams. And, you know, if Matt Milano gets hurt, maybe he's our dime linebacker just to get him used to NFL reps. I could get on board with that. I would think that realistically the Bills would find a position for this kid with Dane Jackson starting right now. But all in all, I would love everything about this pick. I don't know if the Bills will do it, but it's one of those like, man, I would be so impressed if they did, Luca, because it's not only about the immediate. It's about the vision for the future. And give me this kid for the next 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, and the final point of it all, too, is, you know, if you want to get so caught up for anyone else out there, if they want to get so caught up on the immediate future and it's like, I don't know if it makes sense for the Bills because they have another way that would make sense to them to make this work. If that's where you're at. I mean, if proof is in the pudding and you want to go to like the Kyrie Elam situation, you look, reflect back on a lesson to be learned, pulling back from what we discussed earlier. You never would have a Kyer Elam active on game day unless you just had too many injuries at boundary corner, because that's where he was fixed. That's where he needed to be. Jahdae Barron is a guy who you just referenced perfectly and said it perfectly. It's like he can be active on games day, day one, because he is versatile. He can be your Cam Lewis. He can be your Jamarcus Ingram. He can be that because you can put him at boundary corner. You can put him at nickel. You can put him as a dime linebacker. You can put him at safety. He plays special teams. It's like this guy does everything. He is absolutely great for everything. I understand for the people and the thought that it doesn't necessarily make sense for the Bills to do it. And I can see a world where they don't. I'm with that train of thought. I get it. It's not like I'm saying it would be crazy not to do it, although I'm kind of also saying it's crazy not to do it. Where I just can't understand. I've seen some individuals or just the train of thought being out there of, you know, they don't trust rookies to the point where that wouldn't be something they would necessarily want to do. It's like special is special. And when you have something like this, and as you said, you always are drafting for the future, but if you're so caught up on immediate need because the secondary is thin, why in the world would you draft, you know, other boundary corners that you're really hoping to be that opposite of Christian Benford guy who can step up if Benford continues to have these little knocks here and there? And just why do that whole song and dance again when you have this special dude right here that, as you said, you can eventually turn into the next Taron Johnson. You could maybe turn into your next safety after Damar Hamlin. You can do whatever you need to do with him that you're comfortable with. And even in the immediate, he can be available to do it all if you need to. it's not like he's inexperienced. He's inexperienced at an NFL level, of course, but he's done this kind of thing, this song and dance in college at a very, the highest level you could possibly ask. Texas is not your East Carolina. It's not your North Dakota State. You're doing it for Texas on the, on a top tier college defense. And you're the dog, you're the guy, you're the utility, you're the defensive weapon, we'll call it. Like, this is, to me, the player in a vacuum is meant to be active on Bills game days. And day one, week one, Josh, it's Bills at Dolphins. And Jahdae Barron sitting there being your Cam Lewis replacement. And I feel five times better about it because I know this guy's ceiling is five times greater than Cam Lewis's ceiling. As great as Cam Lewis is, it's like, no, this guy is right up here, out of frame. You can't even see my hand right now if you're watching, because that's Jahdae Barron. And if he goes on the field, let's say, whether it's injury or just rest, and all of a sudden pops, maybe that would open up the eyes of everyone else and be like, okay, hey, Taryn, you might need to rotate out a little bit more because you keep getting banged up. We need this guy out there a little bit more. And I look, if that's the reality you have to be in year one, even great, because we all know watching this defense without a Taryn Johnson out there and you having to rely on a Cam Lewis or Jamarcus Ingram in that spot, you see that dip. Let's just get the guy that even in the immediate can already fill that role. Why don't we?
I want it to happen. I'm going to be hammering this home for the rest of draft season. And I will start with Jahdae Barron in this scenario. The Bills have 2 second round picks, one of which they got from the Stephon Diggs trade right now. That looks like tremendous value because he unfortunately had an injury last season. When you look at the draft value charts, Luca, if the Bills wanted to make a move up the board and they use that second round pick they got from the Minnesota Vikings, they could legitimately, based on the draft value chart you look at, get above 20, get like 19, 18, 17 in that range. Do you love Jahdae Barron enough? You're going to answer me before I finish this sentence, I think. Do you love him enough to say, take our first and second? We still have a second with the other one. Is he worth it in your mind to go up to pick 17, 18 and take?
Yes. It's not even a thought.
Okay. Not Jahdae Barron. In general, do you think the Bills, as they are presently constructed, would have the appetite to be aggressive in this draft and go up and get somebody? Because we kind of know where they're at. I think they have a defined need at boundary cornerback. We both agree they have a defined need for just a dude in the secondary. Like, just, we'll figure it out. That's where the Jahdae Barron is. Do you think Brandon Bean's going to approach this draft from a quantity perspective? Or do you think he's going to be like, I was one drive away from going to the Super Bowl. I mean, as cool as it'd be to sit back at 30 and take like the fifth defensive lineman on our board or the fifth cornerback. No, I'm going to go up and take Will Johnson because he's falling because people are concerned about his 2024 tape. Or I'm going to go up and take Jahdae Barron because he's falling because teams aren't sure what to do with him in the NFL, which, good luck. I'm starting to talk myself into the fact that Brandon Bean might get more aggressive than a lot of people have thought on draft day.
I can absolutely see it. This is the first time, with just going off the top of my head, that I think he's had the arsenal to do so. Mm-hmm. That's
since the Josh Allen draft, really.
Yeah, since the Josh Allen draft. And obviously, you're drafting Josh Allen for a reason. It's a very different circumstance. I mean,
take everything.
you're drafting franchise. Like, you have to do it. So that's a little bit of an outlier. So we'll just exclude that. And it's like, this is the first time he's really had the luxury of having that second round pick that is substantial enough to do what you're discussing here. And I'm in the same camp as you. I believe that we could see that swing. Everyone wanted it last year for Brian Thomas Jr. By everyone, I mean me, and there were others too, of course, but you know, you wanted to see it with Brian Thomas Jr. We will, you know, the jury's still out on Keon Coleman. We saw enough to still be okay with him, but we also saw Brian Thomas Jr. was pretty good. That might even be one of those additional lessons, Josh, where, yeah, you see what just happened by not taking that swing and instead going with the conservative approach. Now that you finally have a arsenal in your pocket, the assets in your pocket enough to do something. Yeah. If Will Johnson and Jahdae Barron are sitting there falling and you're sitting there just like, I had Will Johnson at 10. How is he still sitting here at 14, 15? I had Jahdae Barron at 22. How is he still sitting here? Or let's say 18 for this example. How is he still sitting here at 20? Like, and I at that point in time, from 30 to 20, do you really even need your second round pick? I don't know. I would assume you most likely do, but overall the conversation obviously is using that second round pick or first second round pick, however you want to look at it, move up the slots you need to go, just make that big swing play. Yes. For Will Johnson and Jahdae Barron, do it. Signed, sealed, delivered. You can't process that trade quick enough. Do not relive. Again, jury's still out. I'm not sitting here saying Keon Coleman is crap, but you just watch Brian Thomas Jr. be phenomenal for a Jags team that still sucked. And you know, like everything with that, don't relive that. If you have the ability to take that big swing finally at another position of need that also can fulfill the position of the future you need to fill the gap of, like, this isn't just because you need it this season. This is because you need it for the foreseeable future starting this season. And if you have the ability to get a day one impact guy, like we're saying here, Will Johnson and Jahdae Barron is the two. Look, Travis Hunter's not in this conversation. We've already gone over that. Will Johnson and Jahdae Barron, you should be absolutely okay doing it, especially considering you have those two twos.
Let's talk about Will Johnson. You made an interesting comp off the air, maybe not player to player, but situation to situation, to your former draft crush, Derek Stingley. And where you were coming from with that was he had tremendous film in 2023, outstanding, had a dip in 2024. I know the theory out there is 2023, Michigan's competing for a national championship. He's all in. 2024, it's evident very early in the season that Michigan is not competing for anything meaningful at all, to the tone of like when they beat Ohio State, it was like shocked the world, even though they're on a winning streak against Ohio State. Will Johnson, Luca, I think of all the players in this draft, not including Travis Hunter, I would say even including Jahdae Barron, I think Will Johnson reads to me like the Buffalo Billiest player in this draft, especially when you factor in the glaring need they have at a cornerback opposite opposite Christian Benford. And when you look at the fact that he brings size, he's got physicality, he's got ball skills, he doesn't have tremendous long speed, but he's not slow. I think that's an important distinction. And I will raise my hand and say, for many years, I have been obsessed with speed at cornerback. I think it's important. Speed is always a great tiebreaker. You're never going to hurt yourself being fast, but there's so much more to football than being fast. And when you have the instincts of a Will Johnson, I think that he can overcome some of that. Tre'Davious White was not fast, but he has elite foot quickness, which allows him to change direction at a very quick rate. And I just think that he is a perfect boundary cornerback for a Sean McDermott system where he's fast enough to play man coverage if they want to, but otherwise he's like just fine on his side of the field playing match coverage, which you've mentioned multiple times. Let's talk about that for a second. In 2025, even the teams that play man coverage, they're still playing a lot of match principles where it's like, I got him, but I also have to know the route concepts that this team runs tendency wise, because I have him, but if a certain route combination comes at me, I'm going to pass him off and take him. It's like zone with some man built in. So that's really what you see a lot of in the NFL. I think that's another thing that kind of overloaded Kyer Elam. This kid's not going to struggle with it. I would love Jahdae Barron. I think Jahdae Barron, I don't even know if I want to say this. I love Will Johnson too. I would absolutely trade up for him as well. Will Johnson. And 15, 16, 17, if he starts to fall because people are nervous about his 2024 tape, I could see him being a player that the Bills absolutely love. What do you think about that?
I think Will Johnson's a McDermott corner. Like he checks all the boxes you want, very high IQ. I mean, a McDermott corner, you have to be incredibly football smart while also just having, as you, I like the way you call it, foot quickness. You have to have that ability to react on instinct quicker than your average DB, your average guy. There's a lot of fast corners that don't excel because they don't have that IQ to match with it. And I'm not saying that they're not smart, but they don't have the football IQ to go with it, that they, it's almost like their feet are moving before their brain even fully process what they're seeing, because they're just so trained at a high level to understand what's going on in front of them, or, you know, or around them. And Will Johnson absolutely has that. I did mention it to you off air. It does feel like that Stingley situation. And in my point to that comp, of this is where it did have that dip. It's like, I don't care about the dip. I already saw him at his highest level. And at his highest level, it is like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. This guy is shut down, knows everything that's going on around him. The IQ is through the roof, willing tackler, even at times, you know, run defending and understanding where to actually attack gaps and whatnot when needed. It is there. He is just a phenomenal talent that he feels like the perfect representation of what you need now in a new age DB. You know, you don't just have your traditional boundary corners anymore, that really it's like, hey, one-on-one man, just you have him at all times. We'll worry about the rest. That's not a new thing. Like you mentioned the match concepts and everything, like that is your new age, and Will Johnson excels in that format. And that feels like something that this defense could absolutely love. I will say the one place that we love to go just for comps as well, or just to understand where they sit in the landscape of mocks and just analysis and all that kind of stuff. There's three names. So they have enough data now where they, based on the percentages they have them in certain ratings and metrics, Josh, they then spit out the highest, closest player comps, which are of course all recent names, but that they have within their database. Two of these names, going into the draft, I love them so, so much. The third name is just one we're going to be scarred with forever, and it's hilarious. So JC Horn is his close percentage comp. Christian Gonzalez is there as another close comp. The third, Kyrie Elam. Don't understand that one because I don't see the same player in Will Johnson to Kyrie Elam, but I just find it funny. I will say the Christian Gonzalez comp is one that I love. There is a lot of similarity, I feel like, when I was going from Gonzo to Will Johnson. It just feels like they both play at a similar cerebral level. Gonzo, though, to me, is a little bit more of your true man corner comparatively. But overall, they had the same thing where it wasn't necessarily that they were true one-line speed, but the ability to get to the place they needed to was almost in front of already their high IQ, that they're just always disrupting things. They're always understanding what's in front of them, and they can shut you down that way because of it. So I do love that one a lot. I think that is very valid, but I mean, realistically, yeah. Will Johnson and Jahdae Barron. So I mentioned the tiers of this draft class in the DB realm. That is your first tier. Now, Travis Hunter's in there just because you can't have a tier zero, I guess, but I guess we could also at the same time. Who cares? So Will Johnson, Jahdae Barron are above the rest. They are clear guys that it's like first round grade, obviously. They are the ones you should be willing to move up for. They are dogs. They are day one impact guys through and through. I just feel like they're other in the DB realm, other than Travis Hunter. They are your most foolproof. If you missed on these guys, I can't even be upset about it, because going into it, it's just like something else must have gone terribly wrong. It can't be based on what you projected. They are so good. And I would also be stunned if they failed somehow at the next level, especially in a Bills defensive room.
That's the key too, is how many, Kyrie Elam aside, how many defensive backs has Sean McDermott gotten the absolute most out of? So we've talked about what we think are the blue chippers in this draft.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some guys that if the Bills don't move up, that could fall to them at 30 and could really kind of scratch their itch. There's one guy I want to bring up here that there's some warts here, but there's also a reason why he's fallen to 30. And I'm going to probably butcher his name, Siobhan Revelle out of East Carolina. So right off the bat, one wart is he played East Carolina. So that's just not the same thing as playing at Texas or playing at Michigan. You're not playing the same level of competition. He also is coming off of an ACL injury. That ACL injury is why he would be available to the Bills at pick 30. He has very good size. I just had it on my screen. He is 6'3", 193. I heard one podcast say that they comped him to like the third Cromartie brother, Dominic Rogers Cromartie, Antonio Cromartie. Like he's like the third Cromartie brother. He's got very good ball skills. He's a very good athlete. But there is a concern about one, ACL injury recovery, two, bigger leap from small school. Granted, Christian Benford came in from Villanova and started the first game of the season for the Bills against the Super Bowl champions, who had Matt Stafford throwing passes to Cooper Kupp. But, you know, he's a special player. Not everybody can have that. But that would be a concern. But I think when you're talking about pick 30, Luca, this to me is the kind of player that's not too hard to talk yourself into. I think where you get with him, though, is there more to his game than the sexy attributes? I think yes. I think this guy does bring a lot to the table and is fundamentally sound and isn't just like this ball of clay of athleticism that hasn't been refined yet. I don't think he's plug and play like Will Johnson, obviously. That's why you're getting him at 30 and not 10. But I do think for a guy that the Bills could get at 30, especially in this draft class, that would make a lot of sense to me if that's where the Bills went.
It would. I mean, I do believe that taking a guy like him would be much more on the, you know, measurables and just the simple nature of they really feel like it, one, you have to trust the medical analysis that you have had of this player. I would certainly hope that that's happened if they're even considering him on their board in the first round. But overall, you have to trust that and that, you know, everything checks out there. And then you cannot get past those measurables because they are all elite tier level measurables that, if you even feel parts of his game are rough or just not quite there, whether it's that he's, you know, I have seen some things, which also puts a little red flag in my head of like, is grabby when he loses leverage and kind of starts getting separated from or loses his man initially off the line. That just has, I feel like we've mentioned this guy enough. It has Kyrie Elam vibes.
PTSD.
Where it's like, okay, that was a similar knock to him and it seemed to be something he wasn't able to curb. That's one individual, right? You can't just get caught up on that. Maybe that individual was just not able to be coached out of it, and this one would. Siobhan would be able to be coached out of that. You never know. But I have no problem. It's something you just said before we went into this. How many DBs and corners have come into a McDermott system and somehow not gotten the best out of themselves? I mean, there's too much evidence of the positive that you can't get caught up on the miss once in a while. Everyone misses. There are just certain times where a relationship for of whatever capacity, professional, you know, personal, whatever it is, it just doesn't work out for whatever unknown reason. It just happens. There's no perfect world that we live in. And realistically, it's you had your miss with Kyrie Elam. Why would you live and say, okay, Siobhan could also be that. He could easily be that perfect thing that you thought you could have had with Tariq Woolen that didn't work out because of his measurable. It's like, boom, this is going to work out. I'm not comparing him apples to Tariq Woolen. I'm just saying it's in the vibe of if you think he has a lot of stuff to work on when it comes to his technique and all of that, but he's got all the measurables in the world. His athleticism is clearly there. And you trust also just the caveat in this case with the medical, you should absolutely feel comfortable with a guy like that at pick 30 sitting in your lap. How you doing? Keep it moving. This is a great pick. I don't see anything wrong. I'm not going to be sitting there on draft night hearing Siobhan Revel Jr. Being called out as the Bills pick at 30 and be upset about it. I would trust that they did all the due diligence they needed to ahead of time to make that work. And I would be very excited to get McDermott's hands on him and truly see if he can get the best out of him, because evidence has shown us that that is very much more likely than not. And if you can get the best out of a 6'2", 4'4" lengthy corner, that sounds phenomenal to me opposite of Christian Benford. Thank you very much.
Yeah, especially when there's a realistic chance that you're going to be seeing the Bengals in the playoffs at some point with Jamar Chase and those guys. Luca, I know you're always really big on whether or not a player was a top 30 visitor. Ryan Talbot from New York Upstate, also of the Shout Buffalo podcast, reports 11 hours ago today that he was on a top 30 visit with the Bills. So far, only two defensive backs have been reported on top 30 visits with the Bills. The other one is Trey Amos, who I know is a fan, you're a fan of. So I know he was going to be mentioned shortly by you at some point. So why don't we go ahead and get into him? What do you like about him? And is he somebody you would consider at pick 30?
This is another McDermott guy. This is like the first thing that really pops about Trey Amos is willing tackler and run defender. And it's funny because I always internally, I just make fun of the fact that they always like to highlight a corner's ability to defend the run and be a willing tackler. Like, it's the complete opposite of how I would approach it, just personally. But they're sitting there getting successful corners left and right, and I'm just sitting here behind the mic of a podcast that you're listening to right now for a good
Thank
reason.
You for listening, by the way. Yeah.
So overall, I'm not going to say that how they process and evaluate these players is exactly wrong, but that is really truthfully the first thing that stands out about this guy. And that, of course, checks all the boxes in the world that the Bills like. The other thing is his size and length. The length isn't quite there. That's the interesting part. I think his arms are a little bit shorter than it's not high percentile, but he's still tall. He's still got that speed overall that it's not like it's a problem, but it's less speed. It's more quickness. You know, you've mentioned it earlier. The quickness is absolutely there. And he actually is a very intelligent player. And it does also feel like it's not a perfect situation, but it feels like his boundary abilities are absolutely there, and you just need to get him up to speed. He's versatile enough that you just need to get him up to speed and at what you need to do with him assignment wise and everything like that, that overall, like, you would hope you don't have a Kyrie situation where it's just, he's not capable of learning it. It feels like that's more there. It's not like he's just strictly a press man guy, stuff like that. That is where he excels a little bit more than your zone. It does feel like the zone needs a little bit more work to it. But it does feel like you're going to be able to allow to trust him to line up on the opposition's X if you need to and get the most out of him. He's comfortable in that world. He's got a good frame overall for it. Like I said, the length might not be there like your top end guys, but overall, it does feel like he has great ball skills. You know, he understands how to play with the leverage to the boundary for him in his favor, which is a very powerful strength to have at the defensive back position, especially in a league that tries to restrict your ability to do a lot of things. And overall, I just like it almost feels like when you watch him, he plays it as if he has wide receiver instincts at times where mm-hmm. he's trying to attack the ball greater than you are as at the actual wide receiver position. And that is special. Like, that's, if you have a DB that's willing to truly attack at that ferocity, I love that. I think that's a big dog mentality. And I am a big fan of that, especially on this defense. You need guys like that. Christian Benford is just like that. That's what stood out to me about him. He was always over top, was never a problem. And he's got that big dog mentality. He is trying to be the bigger receiver than the individual that's across from him. And that's huge. That can win you a lot of, you know, pass breakups. That'll win you some interceptions. That'll make plays happen for you. And it feels like he has that ability to make that possible. There's a lot to like about him. It's no shock at all to me that he's a top 30 visit. I mean, that he felt like, again, the first things I noticed, tackler, run defender, like, oh, okay, this guy's going to be coming into the building and we're going to see more out of him. Like, that's not a surprise.
I would not be elated if he was the pick at 30. I think it would be one of those like golf clap. Like, I get it. They needed a corner. He's values good enough. To me, first of all, a lot of the comps you see for him are James Bradbury, who was in Carolina. Bean and McDermott were both there when that pick was made. Every time his name was ever brought up in trade conversations, the Bills were always tied to that. Apparently McDermott was a big fan of Bradbury. Yes, he reads like a McDermott cornerback, but I just, you know, at some point it's not all about athleticism, but the lack of any like super special athleticism would concern me from a standpoint of like, why would I get super excited? But what I will say, let's say the draft goes by and let's just say Luther Burden is a player that the Bills have like 15th on their board and he's there at 30. And they're like, you know what? Like, we need a cornerback, but we're drafting for the next 10 years. We have this kid rated as a top 15 pick in this draft. We're going to take Luther Burden. And then the Bills go back to their board, reset it on day two, and Trey Amos is sitting there, and they have those two twos in their pocket, and they want to move up on day two to get maybe in the top 40 to get a cornerback. That's where I would like the pick. It's, we didn't get a cornerback in round one, but we addressed like best player available in a very big way in this scenario. And now we're going to back it up on day two by getting that cornerback that can at least come in and probably compete with Dane Jackson, if not come in and beat out Dane Jackson, even in his rookie year. That would be where I'd be most comfortable with him. Luca, before we move on to safety, is there any day three-ish prospects you like that, you know, you talked about how they backed it up with Christian Benford in that draft. Is there anybody that you have your eye on specifically that potentially has the same name as a famous basketball player or anything like that?
I mean, there is Kobe Bryant. Yeah. Another Kobe Bryant will be coming to the league out of Kansas this time, not Cincinnati. I do like Kobe, although I'm very curious to, I mean, I really love Kobe Bryant, you know, RIP, but I do like this Kobe Bryant. I think he's probably going to be maybe back on day two, so I'm not going to drop him here. I mean, everything like that with him. If we're let's keep the rule strictly. Let's call it the Christian Benford pick. You know, there's the Tom Brady pick. Let's call it the Christian Benford pick. Who do I feel like could be a Christian Benford pick? There's a guy out of Iowa. I mentioned him to you off air. Jamari Harris. He's going to be the back end of round three. That is where he's going to live. You know, there's reasons for it, of course. First and foremost, his clocked 40 time, which I don't know where this came from. It is high 4.5. That's not great, you know, of course, things like that. He doesn't exactly have crazy length in arms. He's just your casual 6 foot as someone sitting here. And, you know, that's clearly very far away from 6 foot. And he's 24 years old when season starts. There's a lot of things going against him in that capacity.
Isn't it weird that I'm a 42 year old guy and I hear somebody's 24 and I'm like, God, he's old.
That is weird. You shouldn't think like that. But at the same time, we're talking to the context of the NFL. That is old.
That's true. The NFL is not asking for me to come in for a tryout anytime soon. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, definitely not. What I will say is this: when you watch this individual, when you watch Jamari Harris, I mentioned with another earlier on big dog mentality. And wanting to be the aggressor, be the attacker, being smart and understand and process what you have. In the everything I've seen about him and watching him as well, and kind of what I've noticed, natural ball hawk, just understands where the ball is at all times, wants to attack it, get to it, process. And he's also that high level process where he plays a lot quicker with his feet, understands what's in front of him, knows what he needs to be capable of. And these are all things that, looking back at it, look at rookie Christian Benford. It's like same thing. Christian Benford had more of the physical size attributes to go with him than a Jamari Harris. But overall, there is something about Jamari Harris that I cannot look past. And I will just say, it's going to be funny on that Saturday sitting there just waiting to see if this guy's picked, because there's a reality. I mean, when you're projected as late as he is, you know, he could easily not be picked, but he's definitely a name I will just throw out there as my Christian Benford like pick that I'm like, I like a lot about him. I don't know, obviously, if the Bills like him and we're talking about a day three guy, but overall, if all of a sudden magically something happened where it's like the Bills with pick, I don't even know what their day three picks are. Let's say 230. I don't know. But with 230, they pick Jamari Harris. I'll be like, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Did we just get a guy that I'm going to be very excited to track? You know, realistically, look, let's be honest, probably practice squad, but let's see what happens with him. Let's see what he can do. And I would have a little bit of a sparkle when it comes to thinking about him. And, you know, watching him in preseason game one, I'll be like, I like that guy. I want
to
see
that. That would not be your reaction, by the way. Your reaction would immediately be to DM me and say, Josh, go back to our defensive back episode and clip out me talking about him and put it on social media immediately. Yeah. That would be your reaction. And that's cool. I respect it. All right, Luca, let's move on to safety. I think the number one safety on most boards is Malachi Starks. And look, if you watch Georgia, every time they're on, he popped. I will tell you, even I don't think he's going to be a player that's even like within range of the Bills anyway, but he's not my favorite idea for the Bills at safety because I feel like he's much more of a box safety and the Bills need somebody that can come in and really cover deep. I hope you're hoping that's Cole Bishop. That's not necessarily what he did in college at Utah, but you're hoping his athletic skill set can do that. And that's where you're even thinking, like, could Malachi Starks transition to more of like a nickel corner role in the NFL, which I think he could and he'd be fine at, but there's other players in this draft that we've already talked about that I would put ahead of him, Barron, in that specific role. So we don't have to spend too much time on him. I don't think he's within their range. I don't know that it's a perfect scheme fit, but anything you want to add on Starks?
No, I think overall Starks is probably the best when it comes to experience, high level competition. And just, I think you say it right. I think he's not necessarily that deep safe safety where that's more, of course, what the Bills are looking for. He does feel a little bit hybridish, where that you would probably see him playing a lot of nickel safety zone slot, like just living in that space where he's being utilized all over the place. And as you said, me personally, if you're trying to look for something like that and you're debating between Malachi Starks and Jahdae Barron, I'm leaning Jahdae Barron personally, yeah. But overall it's, yeah, he's still going to be a great player. I would imagine there are just things that I think Jahdae Barron's going to excel more in the NFL level than he would. And if he's not the true safety you need that you'd be drafting off of that. And he's not as good as a corner as a Jahdae Barron. So why half acid, I guess, is the way to put it when it comes to if we're comparing those two. That's a very high level comparison, right? Mm-hmm. It feels like I'm doing him disservice. I expect Malachi Starks should probably be coming off in the top half of the draft. That's realistically what I expect. So I'm not saying that he's chopped liver here, but overall, I don't see the fit when it comes to the Bills nearly as much as other guys that are going to be available.
Do you have a favorite safety in this class? And does that favorite safety, if it's not Starks, or maybe other than Starks, if he's your number one for the Bills, and is it somebody that would be there at the range of 30, or is it somebody the Bills need to trade up for?
Definitely my favorite safety idea for the Bills. It's funny. So if we're looking at it from a lens of first round only, I'm just going to start there. I think there's only one guy, and even then, I think you're drafting him just because he's a freak. Like, let me just start with that. I don't even know if necessarily he's truly just that deep, safe safety, but at the same time, he's so freakly athletic and gifted that just get McDermott's hands on him, and I'm sure he'll figure it out. Like, that's how I feel. And this is out of South Carolina, Manwari.
There seems like there should be another vowel between the N and the W, but there's not. Emenwari.
Yeah, that I think you said it right. Emenwari. So he is just a freak. Mm-hmm. Like he is first round freak, stuff like that. And I'm starting with that quick. I'm imagining you probably want. He feels like your kind of guy.
No.
Wow, I'm shocked.
Here's the analogy. I did not think you were gonna go with him. I thought you were gonna go. You were gonna tell me about your Notre Dame guy.
I was gonna say, but okay. I'll go into the other guy after this.
Let me tell you my analogy on him. We've all been at Walmart before, right? You're buying groceries, buying whatever, and you just happen to mosey on past the electronics and you're like, 75-inch TV for $300? Like, I don't need a TV, but how could I pass up a 75-inch TV for $300? That's what he is to me. You look at the height, weight, speed, and you're like, what? Is this real? And then you start doing research on the TV and you're like, well, I've never really heard of that brand. Oh, okay. The Hertz and the refresh rate on this TV aren't necessarily up to speed. This isn't going to perform as well. I know you're a TV guy, Luca. You're kind of a TV snob in that regard. Like you don't mind spending more for quality.
Yeah.
I think that's what you risk here with this pick. I absolutely see the traits. The traits are undeniable. He might have some of the best traits in the entire draft. 6'3", 227. But the problem is, the criticism of him is he plays much smaller. He does. If a safety is 6'3", 227, you want him Ronnie Lawton people when he hits him. You want people to be afraid to go over the middle. And he just kind of like introduces himself to the play. He doesn't, you know. So, you know, I think there's a lot. If the Bills took him at 30, I could talk myself into it. But it is a projection.
Yeah.
And as I am like, and I know why you think I love him, I'm like Mr. Height, Weight, Speed guy when it comes to the draft. Yeah. This one to me has that buyer beware label written all over it, where it's kind of like, don't fall in love with the upside, because the reality is what you see right now is probably somebody that can't even start for the Bills right away. And that's tough. So that's my thoughts on him.
No, that's fair. And I was going to kind of go into that. And the reason I said that, though, is it's singularly in the lens of first round, and you're drafting. We know the Bills traditionally, and this is where I think they're going to be very strict with. You put out the tweet every year. We talk about it every year. There's certain levels of criteria that the Bills look at for a first round grade guy. And in his case, he technically checks off everything other than the top 30 visit, which could easily happen, right? There's still plenty of time for that to occur. And if he checks that box, he officially checks everything. He'll be 21 years old. He's freakily athletic, you know, top 30 visit, like we're discussing, so on and so forth. The guy that you thought I was going to discuss, and one that me personally, I would be comfortable with the back end of the first round, but realistically, I believe the Bills would look at him as a day two guy. And overall, I could easily see him just being a second round pick anyways, is Xavier Watts out of Notre Dame. I love Xavier Watts. I love everything about his game. I think he is incredibly smart. He's not the greatest athlete out there, but he's one of the most impactful players out there on defense. Xavier Watts is single-handedly one of the reasons the Fighting Irish made it all the way to the Natty from a defensive perspective. He was an absolute dog out there. He's everything you want out of a McDermott-style safety, in my opinion. It does feel like he's a top-down kind of safety, but he can still also play well in the box and do everything you need him to if called upon. His strength is absolutely in zone coverage, deep half. What I will also add on this, the reason I don't see him as a first-round grade, especially in the Bills, he's 23 years old. Mm-hmm. And that's just too old for the Bills. It's Leonardo DiCaprio looking for a girlfriend. You're too old for me. I can't go with you. Sorry. Like, it's, I know it feels terrible saying like that. It feels like
that might be the same age range too that Leo's looking at. 24 is just too old.
We're being very ageist right now.
Yeah.
But there's too much history to tell me that I can't use that as a legit piece of information to go, he is not a first round grade guy for the Bills. And that's unfortunate. But at the same time, it's a successful formula. You don't just all of a sudden magically have all these successful first round picks if you're not figuring it out by some formula. And that's the only reason, Josh, I didn't lead off with him. But I love the player. I love everything about him. I mean, my favorite thing, to put it simply, is a lot of these DBs we've talked about, you'll see that their quarterback, even the high-end guys, their quarterback rating when targeted is around the 50s generally. His quarterback rating when targeted was a 35.
Love that.
Like, it is like this guy is just making things happen. It's not necessarily like he's the best athlete out there. He's not the biggest player out there. But he is hard to play against. And that's exactly what we need at safety. You need someone that just completely makes their life miserable on their side of the field. Like, you have to have that guy. And he came up and showed up every week, and he was clearly one of the biggest pieces to the Fighting Irish and Notre Dame in that defense. And everything about him is just phenomenal. That he's one. I will just finish the point with that. You have the scenario where you picked elsewhere day one, you figured that out, whatever, but you want to make sure you, when you reshuffle that board and you see Watts still available, that you're probably moving up in that top five of round two, because that's exactly where a guy like him is probably going. And you have to get that.
Who is the last Notre Dame player that the Bills have picked? I don't think they've picked one under Brandon Bean.
No, I don't think they've gone Notre Dame under Brandon Bean. It's so funny. You know what I love about this conversation, not to get off track, but it's funny. Like, Notre Dame might be one of the few schools that you can have that conversation. And it's like, you either love them or hate them, obviously, when it comes to watching them, but in the same regard, it does feel like there's a tendency of certain teams or organizations that love Notre Dame players. And then there's other ones that just clearly avoid them for whatever unknown reason. Like, it's just like, okay, that's your prerogative, I guess. Man, that's a good question. That's a good trivia question, Josh. Off-season question.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to get there. Maybe we'll do it on draft night.
There you go.
Yeah. On the holster. There you go. Okay. So in that scenario, imagine they get Will Johnson in round one and Watts in round two, and Luka is just doing laps around his house. Like secondary, like we're going to go back and rewatch that AFC championship game, because that is no longer the life we have to live. All right. We're almost on an hour and a half here, and safety is not as top heavy as corner. So no. I think maybe we can kind of just both name one or two more guys we really like. I did want to tell you, I do have a guy that I really like. I don't think this is like a deep, deep sleeper. I think he's probably somebody that could go back end of day two, maybe early day three. But what I really like about him is he reminds me a lot of one of my favorite players from about two generations ago, Bob Sanders. Bob Sanders for the Colts was like the ultimate chess piece on that team. Now, the same thing I don't like about Bob Sanders is the same thing that this kid has working against him is
that's right.
He's so small for the position, but yet he plays so intense that being healthy is a massive problem. And Bob Sanders, when he was healthy, the Colts won a championship. Like, he fixed their run defense by himself. This kid that I'm just going to tell the name here is Andrew Makuba from Texas. The way he plays is so intense. He's a smaller guy. PFF has him at 6'1", 190. I think he's in the 180s. Like, I think that's a generous 190. And that's a tough ask to ask somebody that's 180. I mean, it's my size out there playing safety. I would not want to have to tackle Derrick Henry in the hole. I wouldn't want to have to tackle James Cook in the hole, for what it's worth. But he's a smaller guy. But every time he introduces himself to the play, he is flying in off the screen. And, you know, there's an intensity there. And I'll just say it. I don't mean he's a bad guy off the field. I don't know anything about him off the field. The Bills can use a couple more assholes on defense. And the way he plays like an asshole. And I don't mean like he's doing dirty stuff after the play, but he's letting you know every single play that he's taking it personal that you think you're going to beat him. Right now, I think the Bills have one of those players on defense, and it's Terrell Bernard. Terrell Bernard plays with an intensity that I think should be infectious for the rest of this team. Greg Rousseau, you see it in splashes. Ed Oliver, you see it in splashes. It's why so many Bills fans loved and adored Jerry Hughes. Every single play, you thought Jerry Hughes could potentially get in a fight with somebody on the other team. And on some level in sports, you need that guy on your team. And the Bills just lack those guys. And this is the kind of guy that you could just see three or four times a season. He runs in, makes a massive hit, and then you got to pull both teams apart. And the Bills just need those guys. I think he's an exciting player. I don't know what the draft's going to look like. If the Bills only get one DB on day one, he's going to be somebody that if he's still there on day three, I am just the same thing I had when Tyreek Woolen was there on day three. We're just texting back and forth. You were at a Sabres game. Like, what's going on with Woolen? Are the Bills going to get him? I could see me bothering you that I don't know if you crush on this guy as much as I do, but I could see myself being like, go get him. But infuse him in our defense and our locker room, please.
It's funny. As soon as you said Bob Sanders,
I knew where I was going.
Internally, yeah. I was frustrated because I was like, damn it. He's literally talking about the guy I was going to start with when I roll off a couple names. Because, yeah, he plays so much bigger than what he is. He is all over the place. Another guy who stood out a little bit in that wonderful game that I don't ever want to think about from New Year's Day this past New Year's. Yeah. If these guys end up being Bills, I'll forgive them. Let's just put it that way. If John A. Barron becomes a Bill, I'll easily forgive him. It's, you know, if any Texas player becomes a Bill, I will forgive them.
If that running back that stood out for the other team becomes a Bill, Luka's going to be out of control.
Yeah. That's a little different. That's a whole different breed. Okay. I want to name a couple guys here, and these are going to be a little bit later than what you're referring to. The one though, it's funny because he's not even like a safety necessarily. This is just a guy that it's like, dude, this guy will make some plays early on, at least if he does it exactly like he did it at a small school of Tulane. If this guy does the same crap, we might have a dime linebacker slot, you know, one of these kinds of guys. And I don't care because he's going to be a late round pick. Mm-hmm. So you just take what you get at that point. Caleb Ransaw, mm-hmm. One sweet ass name. For a guy that plays the way he does, it fits perfectly. Ransaw. Yeah. Boy, does he run, and he saws down people. That's like, I'm not kidding. He is, you want to talk about willing tackler, ferocious, downhill guy. Just if you don't know who this guy is, which I'm assuming almost everyone listening does not know who this guy is, I highly suggest trying to find some tape on this guy. You will fall in love with him if you love physical football. But what I think is funny about a guy like him is it does feel like the Bills try to find guys who can be willing special team player, dogs kind of guys. And the one of the thing you read and hear about with this guy left and right, if you're you, it's the classic guy that people will be like, hey, just a day three guy just to pay attention to. Great on special teams. Mm-hmm. This guy, like, it's that's always what's said about him. Caleb Brantaugh. And it's like everything you hear about him, athletic. I mean, 4.3, 4.3, 3.40. 40-inch vertical, broad jump through the roof. Like, okay, he's athletic as all can be. He's not undersized. He's 5'11". It's not the tallest again, but not undersized. Bigger hands, so be it. Who cares? The key is hell of a willing tackler. Downhill, just dog. And it's like, if you drafted a great special teamer around, day three, rounds 5, 6, 7, whatever it is that turns out to be this guy, awesome. If he can even become a valuable asset in packages and the defense, even better. Then this guy feels like he might have that capability that if you need kind of that dime linebacker coverage that can also be a safety-like player for you, this is your guy. That is absolutely what it is. The other one I'm going to talk about is Malachi Moore. Malachi Moore is one that feels like he's being picked on because of his measurables. And I say that because all of them look underwhelming when you look at it. And that's the only thing I can think of that has him falling down as far as it feels like he's falling. Right now on the one database we look at, he averages in the 180s when it comes to pick on the board. Malachi Moore is an individual though. When you watch him, you go, okay, this guy's probably, a second round, third round pick. And then for whatever reason, it really feels like he's being day three for sure kind of guy. And again, I'm chalking that down to measurables. Mm-hmm. Because I genuinely think he's a very good player. I think his instincts are through the roof. You don't play and start on an Alabama secondary unless you're pretty damn good and smart. And he understands everything that's happening in front of him, that I feel like he is another guy you can watch later on in the draft, if he were to come into the Bills facility, that for whatever reason, McDermott just has this thing that I'm not calling him Micah Hyde because it doesn't remind me of Micah Hyde itself, but Micah Hyde was not like some freak athlete or anything like that. He was nothing truly, I'm not going to say not special, but like Micah Hyde isn't exactly a world beater when he was in Green Bay and then they brought him in. But I genuinely believe the best you could have ever seen Micah Hyde be was exactly what McDermott got him to be. And it feels like Malachi Moore has that vibe that you don't need to be the best athlete out there because McDermott's going to mold you into being the best player you can be and then put you in the best position to excel. And if you already have the IQ and everything else that needs to go along with that, you can be an exceptional player. And Malachi Moore really does feel like that guy that I could easily be very happy with a pick come day three, if that's how it transpires, or even see them trade into the back end of day two, right at the tail end of round three, just to make sure they secure him because they've seen him falling there and they have fallen in love. I can absolutely see him being kind of that Bills style guy to fill a need if they need to. But realistically, it looks like for whatever reason right now, he's someone you could easily see going in round 4 or 5, even, wherever it is, and be picked. And I would love to see someone like him in the building with the Bills and McDermott.
It's interesting. And Alabama did not have, I'm not flipping you off. Sorry. I'm just keeping something in my eye. Alabama did not have a great defense by their standards this year. Yeah. But I do think there's a tendency with teams like Alabama and Georgia, when somebody doesn't have elite measurables on their defense, it's very easy to think, oh, they were just carried by the studs around them. And I'm with you. I think he's very technically sound. I think he's a good player. And I think he's going to have a long career in the NFL, whether it's as a backup or maybe somebody that ultimately develops into a starter. And that's where I want to end this show tonight. And maybe more so even with your pick of Caleb Brantaugh. We talked about Christian Benford, who's kind of an outlier, who comes in, gets drafted in the 6th round, becomes a starting player. We talked about Taron Johnson, same thing, 4th round pick, starter instantly. That is not something that you can really count on, expect. But what we've seen time after time again with the Bills is if you can make your mark on special teams, You can hang around, albeit on the practice squad or the back end of the roster, long enough to carve out a role on defense. And I'll give you three names, defensive backs in particular: Saran Neal, Cam Lewis, and Jamarcus Ingram. These are three players that, in Cam Lewis and Jamarcus Ingram's situation, spent multiple years on the practice squad before they ever got a chance to be on the roster. And then when they got a chance to be on the back end of the roster, really stood out on special teams, which allowed them to compete for spots on the roster, get extended contracts, and become valuable depth pieces. That is exactly where I see a path for someone like a Caleb Ransaw. You mentioned the fact he could come in right away and be a dynamo special teams player. Yeah, great. Come in, make your mark on special teams, and that affords you the luxury of developing as whether it's a safety, a cornerback, a big linebacker, whatever the Bills want to develop you as. If you can make yourself valuable now as somebody who gets a jersey on game day, and then you can also develop other skills, it may not be 2025. It probably won't. 2026 or 2027, this could be a very important player on the Bills defense that stayed in the pipeline because he made himself valuable in other areas. And that's the beauty of the draft, is those are the guys that have to find a way to carve out other roles to stay around long enough to develop, because you see teams just kind of flush in and flush out rounds 5, 6, and 7 players just because, you're not helping us on game day. Let's go find somebody that can cover kicks, or let's go find somebody that can cover punts or whatever, return punts. Like Daquan Hardy was a guy we were all excited about last year in training camp, and the Bills cast him aside because he had reliability issues on catching punts. And the Bills went out and got somebody else, and they were better off for it. But that's where I think a player like that really has a chance to shine. Luca, what are we doing next?
That's a great question, because I feel like we're obviously doing it through a Bills lens. I don't think we need to talk about quarterbacks. I don't think there's anything else on the defense as well. You know, I think linebacker, it's really kind of underwhelming. And that's all that we have left to cover. Quarterback, we definitely don't need to. Yeah, we don't have to.
I learned sign that. Language, Luca.
Oh. Yeah. I think we're going with wide receivers. I think that's what we're doing.
I didn't want to burn say you. This, but...
Yeah. Oh, my God.
We have a pretty strong bond. The hunter became the hunted. Okay.
Oh my goodness. This guy's just ripping the dad jokes. Yeah, I don't think I will say a caveat. We won't probably have time to do running backs on their own. But if there's a year to also include running backs and make sure we cover, next episode might be a longer one. Let's just put it that way. Because
how about offensive skill? And we'll just understand that we're not going to take a tight end.
Bingo. That's I think that offensive skill. We live on air, because running backs, I'm just going to caveat, as much as the wide receivers are, of course, one, fun to talk about, and two, there's a lot of them that we want to talk about. Running backs, if there's a class to really dive into and just understand the, let's call it, diverse nature of this class, and there's just obviously one I want to talk about a lot, we're going to get into it, because I think the Bills are also in an interesting place when it comes to the position. So it should be one we spend time on.
James Cook is right now living in the book of how to let the world know that you're not happy, you're not getting a contract extension. And he has gone with the publicly put his house on the market example. Yeah. I put a tweet out from our account. I know you co-sign with it. I usually try to, if I put things out there, hope that you're close. And I was like, I am totally content with my team being the make a running back unhappy that we won't extend him team. And
yes,
great. You know, I love James Cook. I love the player he's become, but I am totally applaud Brandon Bean for drawing a line in the sand saying, here's how much we're willing to pay you. If you don't like it, great. You've earned the right to become a free agent a year from now, but we still have you for a year. I would not think the Bills would franchise tag a running back. That would be silly. So I would say that James Cook has one more year with the Bills and he'll probably be gone, or they'll find a way to work it out. But right now I wouldn't worry too much about some of the stuff going on in the media. It's typical leverage stuff going on. Maybe we'll see a training camp holdout. It is what it is, but it does not seem like a James Cook contract extension is imminent, but that would open up the possibility that the Bills, who still do have Ty Johnson on a 1-year deal, but he's getting older. And then Ray Davis, you could absolutely see them adding a running back to the pipeline. And this would be a great draft to do it, because there's a lot of depth in this class. So I'm excited to talk about that. And it's always a good thing to talk about receivers, Luca, because you and I, it doesn't matter what the team needs are. I can't think of any situation where the Bills have Josh Allen and they take a receiver in round one and you and I are like, why'd you do that? Like, we'd be like, we get it. Yeah. I don't care what the team needs are. Josh Allen weapon is always a top need.
Oh my God. What a shame. We're giving Josh Allen more fun toys to have on the boundary. Oh no. Yeah, no. Why do you, if you have a stalwart at quarterback and he is a guy, which I think we're there. I think 17's it. I don't know. Say. He did have that one award he just won where it
what
says,
was that again?
I think it's the league MVP. When you have that guy, it's like, okay, let's make sure his life is trying to be as easy as possible. Let's do that. Now, first you protect him, of course, which I think the Bills have done a pretty good job with. Now you get him the things to get the ball to. And it's like, I think we can all agree you could do a little bit better in that department, but also you can never do too much in that department.
Exactly.
So that is the key of everything we're saying here. Get him more things. Support Josh Allen. He's supporting you already by signing deals that aren't even technically record-breaking, at least when it comes to total dollars. Let's just support him with giving him assets and weapons and things to continue to be that MVP-level guy.
You know, everybody eats is fun. It worked. You know what's even better than everybody eats? Having a dude who is so hungry that you just can't stop him from eating constantly.
Yeah. Yes.
Constantly. Remember how good that was? Right behind me, a picture of Diggs for a couple years. That was pretty cool. Those guys don't grow on trees. There is a guy in the zoo, though, that kind of reminds some folks of a younger Diggs. We'll get into that and many other things next week on Bills Chat. For Luca, I am Josh McCarty. Happy draft season. Happy April. We will talk to you next time on Bills Chat.